when continuing the interview with Vincent Perry. This is now March 13th, 1990, and we're in Carmel, California. All right, I think when we last were talking, we had just been talking about the El Salvador, Indio Muerto, El Salvador process effect in Chile. We hadn't talked much about Chuki, but you wanted to go back and pick up the British Guiana.
I think this would fit in with the general trend of the narration here, because
when was El Salvador developed?
Well, the first trip was 1944, but no serious work was done there until the early 50s. That's when the actual exploration drilling was done, and the mine was brought into production about 1956.
Mm-hmm. And Guiana was before
that. And Guiana was before that. Guiana was in the late 40s.
And that was a different metal also.
That was a different metal, although we were looking for copper and other valuable non-ferrous metals too. But the venture was initiated by the colonial government of British Guiana offering Anaconda a rather attractive prospecting concession that covered the entire colony. The problem, of course, was to recruit some kind of an exploration organization that might effectively carry on that sort of a job. And I knew Jack Nabel personally, who in Salt Lake City. Jack was well known then for his ability as an organizer. He had just finished an important job for the U.S. Smelting and Refining Company at Baird, New Mexico, and had returned to Salt Lake City. He was considered Dick Hunt's right-hand man. Dick was the chief geologist of U.S. smelting at that time. Jack knew that there was an effort by the British Guiana government to explore the colony, and I approached Dick Hunt and talked it over with him, asking Dick whether he thought he could spare Jack Nabel. Dick Hunt proved again his human interest and desire to help his men when he told me that he would never stand in the way of Jack Nabel or anybody else in his organization if they had a better professional opportunity to do something unique and original, and said that it was okay if I discussed a job offer with Jack Nabel. the net result was that Jack Nabel was hired as a Anaconda engineer, and Jack recruited a staff of men, many of whom had been with him on earlier jobs, and proceeded to British Guiana. The work there was immediately started in Nabel's inimitable style. He organized several camps in the jungle, these camps included living quarters for the men and for the wives of the staff and their children. In addition, he constructed an assay office, a sawmill, a power plant, and all the other necessary things that made for an efficient and yet not extravagant base of operations.
Had he done this sort of thing before in other places?
Not on such a large scale, but he had been an engineer in the Philippines before World War II broke out, and had had some experience with foreign activities, particularly under jungle conditions. So this wasn't an entirely new undertaking for Jack. Several properties were, or prospects rather, were carefully mapped. The geological work was under the able direction of Glenn Waterman, likely showings were tested with shallow drill holes.
Showings of what?
Almost entirely gold. There was one prospect particularly that looked attractive and was drilled out. It was called the Omai prospect, O-M-A-I. It was a aplite intrusive, which was laced with quartz veinlets that carried small amounts of free gold. The drilling indicated that there might be a large tonnage of low-grade material here, and Nabel proceeded to sink a vertical shaft and did enough underground work to check the drill hole results and established without much question the veracity of the grade and the extent of the ore body. Unfortunately, about this time there were indications in the international markets that the price of gold was beginning to weaken, and that there was some uncertainty about the future of gold.
When was this?
It was about 19. Let's see the date. There would have been About 1948 or 49, was after about 4 or 5 years after World War II.
And did you get down there?
Yes. Yes, and I made some trips there with Jack. Incidentally, in connection with that, we did some reconnaissance work in adjoining areas of Brazil. One of the facilities that Jack had at his service was a company-owned two-engine Grumman Goose. This was a hydroplane which could land on the rivers and was had a land base at Atkinson Field, which had been built by the U.S. Air Force during World War II as a primary staging field for the transport of planes across the South Atlantic to Africa. It was still had a skeleton crew, and so repair work could be done there on the plane. It was a very convenient and useful facility that we could call on.
Did you go down there before there was any exploration done? Did you get in on the negotiations with the government at all?
The original negotiations were carried on while I was in Salt Lake City, but we made trips down there and had contacts with the Governor General, and we had the finest cooperation with the officials. The colonial government had a geological survey, so they were of considerable help to us.
Did you take their word for things, or did you go out?
No, but we could accept some of the information they gave us, and it was easy enough to check up. It was very helpful to have the preliminary data that was available in the official files for further investigation.
So you looked at their data first, and then you went out and...
Generally, that was a procedure, although you sometimes initiated some of these moves on our own, but it was, we certainly used what information was available.
Did you do this yourself? Were you out there trapping?
No, I didn't. This was all done by the Glen Waterman and the local staff. I made trips there to see the progress of the work and spend a few days and enjoy the thrill of some of the trips that brought us out back into places where little had been done. One trip in particular that I remember, which I was accompanied by Jack Nabel, Glen Waterman, Don Johnson. We had a Jeep, and the Jeep broke down about 30 miles from the landing strip where we had left the Grumman Goose. We went ahead and made the examination of this prospect, sampled it, and left the Jeep in the woods and walked back through the jungle, and I'll tell you, it was a long, long walk. It was 30 miles through a lot of mud and slippery country, and We finally got back to the plane just as a thunderstorm was breaking, and we were delighted to get airborne when we did. I remember that night I flew into the, with the other men into the camp at Omai, and then took off for Atkinson Field, landed there, and had a few hours sleep, and caught a Pan American plane that was passing through Atkinson, landing in New York the next day. And I remember my feet were so raw and blistered that I had a hard time walking off the plane.
Oh, my. Mm.
That was quite an adventure.
Dare say, yes. You were lucky you made it.
Well, I guess I was probably the most unprepared of the other men. They had been in the jungle for several months, and I don't think they suffered as much as I did. They'd already been toughened up to that sort of an existence, but coming out of New York, it was a little bit for my tender feet. The word tenderfoot was could be appropriately applied in this case.
It wasn't mountainous, though, was it?
It was rather hilly, yes.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, there were no mountains such as we think of here in the western United States, but the topography was uneven enough so that there'd be relief of several hundred feet.
Oh.
You had to make your way up and down slopes, but it the worst part was walking through wet and sometimes very thick jungle vegetation.
Mm-hmm.
Very few trails.
You weren't following the jeep road then?
There were places where you could follow trails, and there was of course where we had taken the jeep, there was a jeep road, and we tried to stick with that kind of trail as much as possible.
Mm. I suppose when we're talking about technological innovations, the jeep was a pretty important help, wasn't it?
Well, the jeep was very useful there, yes. Yes, that's true. The only trouble was that there was relatively little of that country that could be navigated even with a jeep.
Even with the jeep.
Yeah. The great thing was the plane, and the plane was exceptionally useful because the jungle is laced with rivers, many of them large and subject to variations in their water levels from hour to hour, depending upon the rainfall.
Mm.
And it was nice to have a plane that you could depend on to hit and coast into a water landing.
Mm.
One of the trips we took was across the jungle, the entire Amazon basin, and landed in Rio. And on that trip, we were rarely out of sight of water. There was water everywhere where you could have put the plane, so that a hydroplane was a real necessity for transportation.
And Nabel flew his own plane.
Nabel flew his own plane, although we had a licensed pilot for the Grumman Goose. an American that had been recruited out of Long Island.
Mm-hmm. So this made things possible that you couldn't have done 20 years earlier, I guess.
I think that's true.
Well, you could have done it, but not so easily.
Not so easily,
oh, no.
It's true.
Well,
the economic conditions had deteriorated to the point where it began to look very uncertain for an economic venture in British Guiana, and the company finally reached the decision that they'd terminate the work, and from there we had left one good prospect at Omai with a large tonnage of developed material, and it has been reported that in the last 3 years, a Canadian company has made some sort of an arrangement with the present government of British Guiana, and at the present time is exploiting this deposit that we developed at that time. So somebody gained by it, even though Anaconda footed a sizable bill for the job. On the plus side, it tested a fine exploration operational group under Nabel's leadership, and it was extremely timely that at that period I was back in on the Colorado Plateau, making some early reconnaissance trips to study the possibilities for locating uranium. Uranium was coming into its own as an important metal, not only as a source for the government in connection with nuclear armament, but also as a fuel for nuclear power. It was also fortuitous that Luther Cleveland, who at that time was chief executive officer of the Santa Fe Railroad, had an informal meeting with Cornelius F. Kelly of the Anaconda Company, and told him that an Indian prospector had located some high-grade uranium at a place called Haystack Butte on Santa Fe land, and wanted to know if Anaconda would have any interest in making an investigation.
So the overture then came from Santa Fe?
Yes, that was originally, yes.
Do you know where? I mean, were they having lunch together in New York?
Oh, I suppose so. It was an informal social get-together.
But this is something that you just heard?
I just heard later, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was just told to go out and check up on this alleged discovery. And
did you find Haystack Butte?
Well, I met the Santa Fe engineers that had already gone out there to investigate this discovery. And the question was whether extent of the showing was sufficient to have some sort of economic value. Santa Fe had already started on some test pits. An agreement was reached between the Anaconda and Santa Fe that we would have an option to make our own independent investigation of that particular showing and all the Santa Fe land that was available in the Grants area. And that was a considerable undertaking because the Santa Fe owned alternate sections which had been granted to them by the U.S. government when the original main line of the Santa Fe had been put through the Southwest. It was a real opportunity, and the investigation of the Haystack showing was carried out by my assistant, Roland Mulkey, and...
Excuse me, where did you stay when you went out there? Did you camp out there?
No, we stayed at
Gallup.
Mm-hmm.
You went in from Gallup?
Yeah, and just drove back and forth from Gallup.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was, easy access. Completely opposite from the type of thing that I had just experienced in my travels with Nabel through the jungles of British Guiana and Brazil.
I'd like to backtrack just a bit to that. Now, when you were, and it'll come into the Haystack thing too, but somebody from New York called you and said, we've got a prospect in Guiana. Is that right?
No.
How did this work?
The details of how we got into the Guiana venture are a little bit cloudy in my mind. I think it was the colonial government that was looking for a mining company.
But how did you find out? How did you get sent down there?
I think it was through a individual who had had contacts with the Governor General and pointed out that the Governor General was receptive to offers from any large, well-equipped mining company to make an investigation of the area.
Did this person tell you this?
Yes. Yes. Came through Salt Lake and told me.
Called somebody in New York and said, I'd like to get down there and check this out.
Well, I'd like to find out whether there is any interest in that sort of a venture in the first place. And when I received an affirmative reply...
Who did you call?
I called Clyde Weed, who was in the, I believe, executive vice president, or at least he was... He was a vice president in charge of mining operations.
So this actually was initiated by you?
Yes, I think that's probably true. Mm-hmm.
And then you went down there and...
No, then I first of all lined up Jack Nabel. Find out whether we would be able to recruit the kind of an organization to carry on that sort of a job. I knew that there would be in an area as large as British Guiana, which was known to have mineral potential, that there would be worthwhile geological situations. So there wasn't any point in making a preliminary field investigation until we found out whether we would have an okay to go ahead with the large expenditure that would be necessary to build an organization and to put that organization to work in under such difficult conditions.
Nabel was an engineer, not a geologist.
Nabel was primarily an engineer, although he had a good geological background.
Right, but he wasn't your
no.
assistant in the geological
No, no. At that time, he was working for a competing company, the U.S. Smelting and Refining Company. And as I say, he was the right-hand man of the Dick Hunt, who had a position with U.S. Smelting and Refining Company similar to the position that I held with Anaconda.
So then when you got this organization and this camp going, this was under your supervision?
Yes, it was under my supervision.
Mm-hmm. In the exploration geology department?
Yep.
And then at some point, presumably, it would be transferred over into an operation?
Well, it would have been transferred to an operation after we had a mine.
Okay. But you never got to that?
No, we didn't get to that stage, although we felt that we had a mine, but the broader political and economic factors that were largely used as the basis for judgment by the board of directors was in other hands, and we had to follow the dictates of our superiors.
Okay, well, this is what I'm trying to get at, that you went down there and you, as a geologist, were checking on the geology, but you also had to be aware of the political situation in the country,
yes.
and the economic situation
exactly.
in the world, and
exactly.
So your mm-hmm. recommendation back to New York would involve those other things as well.
Well, yes, but in addition, it was what other people in the company. In the positions of authority in the company were not geologists but were engineers or were financial people or people with broad international experience that whose input would govern the kind of a decision that was required.
And if you hadn't been able to get Jack Nabel, for instance, the whole thing might have been different.
Well, the great advantage of Jack Nabel was simply that he was the type of person that could lead an actual operation. You had to do the drilling, you had to do the organizing for camp life.
Did he hire all of his own people then?
He hired most of his people, yes.
Did you hire
people? No,
he,
I hired some, but he did most of the hiring. I felt that and I've always felt that the man that's going to run a particular job should have the kind of men under him that he feels would be 100% loyal and would be his men. And Jack Nabel particularly always worked that way.
Where did he get them?
Well, he got them from the mining profession in the West. They were men, many of them, who had worked for the U.S. Smelting and Refining Company at one time or another, that he knew well, or that he'd had some experience with over in the Philippines. Jack was just the kind of person that had gotten around so that he knew a lot of good people, and he was a good judge of people. So that I could depend on him, just as I'm sure Dick Hunt depended upon him when he was working for the U.S. Smelting Company.
Okay, so then when it was not developed,
we gave up our contract with the government.
I see. But at the time you first went to Haystack, Guyana was still...
No, Guyana had been terminated by then.
Oh, it had?
Yes.
Because?
Yeah, because Jack was back, and the question was, where are we going to put this very able and fellow to work on some other project that would fit his skills and abilities?
Okay, now, excuse me, in a way I got off on a sidetrack, but I did want to to get that. So at that time, luckily, then this thing at Haystack
came along.
And went down and looked,
looked it over and decided that it justified Anaconda's participation, and the first move was to do enough bulk sampling to get material for mill tests, which were carried out at Anaconda, and a flow sheet was designed, and mill construction of the mill was started shortly.
Who built it? Did you do that yourself?
I believe it was built by Wilbur Jordan and Company. Parsons Jordan Company. They did most of the construction work for Anaconda, although it started out originally as an Anaconda engineering organization in the town of Anaconda. Jordan was an Anaconda engineer, but it branched out into an independent construction firm because they developed a very widespread clientele and a fine reputation, and other companies wanted their services.
Did you have anything to do with that kind of
business? No, that was just...
Or the mill site?
No.
Did you choose that at
no,
all?
No. That was all up to the operators to decide where they wanted those things.
You simply did the analysis of the...
Of the ore body, and recommended that the mill, the expenditure for that kind of a mill was justified, and that the arrangement with Santa Fe should be continued and further exploration done on not only the Toldilto limestone, but the underlying Morrison sandstones, which my information on the Colorado Plateau indicated very clearly was the most favorable host rock for uranium mineralization.
Did you go back to New York to defend your recommendation?
Oh, yes, I made frequent trips back to New York to discuss this with the New York officials. Sure. Yeah. And this is when we decided that this would be an ideal place to move Jack Nabel. And Jack came out, and in true style, he immediately wanted an aeroplane, and he and his staff began flights around the various cliff-like rims of the Colorado Plateau in that general New Mexico area. And in the course of those flights, using a scintillometer, he detected anomalies that were strong and significant.
Did you go on any of these flights with him?
I made some of them, yes. And some of this ground involved the Laguna Tribal Reservation. And Jack met with the Laguna Tribe and made a very attractive deal with the Indians, which gave Anaconda exclusive rights to exploration on the tribal lands. There were provisions that for payments of royalty and for hiring Indian labor and doing various constructive things in connection with the Laguna tribal communities.
Did you get in on any of those?
No, that was all Jack Nabel's work, not mine. No. The net result of it all was that the discovery of the Jack Pyle mine and the opening up of a large open pit, which soon put Anaconda in a position of the major uranium producer of the United States.
The Haystack mine was an underground mine, was it?
No, the Haystack mine was a surface mine, too.
Is that also
yes.
surface?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Let's see what arrives. So anything else here?
No, this was early 50s, I think.
That would be the early 50s, yes. Mm-hmm. It was after that that the Powhatan ore body was found. That was another large ore body. Mm-hmm. And Nabel also made some attractive deals with the owners of various ranchers in the area. and there was some small discoveries made. But the main production was from the Jack Pyle and the Powhatan. Both those ore bodies were approximately 30 miles from the Blue Water Mill, but they were on the main line of the Santa Fe Railroad, so it was cheap railroad haul right from the mine to the mill. The operations under Nabel and Fitch made excellent costs and were profitable undertakings.
See, Albert Fitch was the manager.
He was the manager. I don't know just how the titles went, but he was generally second in command under Naval, and then it was shortly afterwards that we became interested in the area south of Tucson.
Excuse me, I just did want to say, I think it's kind of interesting that development there at Haystack, and you brought in people from all over the world. I mean, there were
yes.
people from Chuki and people from Guyana.
Oh, yes, they, sure.
And, it
it was recruited from different operations where we could get men that fitted the particular job.
Very exciting that, time.
Yeah, it was. Yes, it was. It was about that time that Jack Nabel had been, because of the constructive work that he had done on the in the Grants District, was wanted back in New York. The mining department of the Anaconda Company felt that they had a place for Jack as an administrator in New York. This was something that Jack simply didn't like to do. He was a field man, and he was a very competent administrator, but he wanted to do it out in the field and not behind a desk somewhere in a big city office. So it just happened that the Geological Department had started an aggressive program in Arizona, south of Tucson, at the old Twin Buttes district, and we had gone along far enough so that I felt that it would be a very important place to have to use Jack's talents. We had already done enough drilling, so we knew we had a sizable ore body, but we didn't know how good it was, and we needed confirmation by driving some underground work. So Jack was glad to get out of New York and came out to Tucson and took over the job of managing the exploration work at Twin Buttes.
He had been in New York then.
He had been in New York for a while, very short time. I don't know how long, but it wasn't very long.
And Twin Buttes was copper again.
And Twin Buttes was copper, yes. And we had, the Twin Buttes story goes back a long ways as far as Anaconda is concerned, because in 1935, Mulkey and I had gone out from Cananea on a mine examination north of the border, and we had stumbled across these very interesting outcrops in a on a mountainside a short walking distance away from the prospect that we had originally started out to examine. We tied that area up. It was the old Rosemont property, and was owned by the Lewison brothers, who had been the original operators at the Miami Copper Company. And we drilled about three shallow holes in the testing the outcrops. We found considerable showings of copper, but they were not high enough grade to interest the mine operators in Butte or New York. So those claims were finally dropped. However, I continued to feel that there was something worthwhile in that whole general area. And many years later, when United Geophysical came in and using a magnetometer located a small high-grade ore body near Mineral Hill, which was several miles from Rosemont, again, I felt that we should take an interest in this area, and Mulkey, who was then head of the exploration office in Tucson, was put in charge of investigation of that general area.
You still held the claims?
Well, we know we had given up the Rosemont claim, but in the meantime, a small company in Salt Lake City called the Banner Company had acquired a large land holding in the district. Our then executive vice president, C.J. Parkinson, who was a Salt Lake resident, knew some of the principals in the Banner Mining Company, and through his efforts, we were able to secure an option on all of the Banner holdings. These included ground adjacent to the discovery of the United Geophysical, and also adjoining claims that American Smelting and Refining Company had established. They also included the Twin Buttes area, the Helvetia area, and Rosemont, all of them within several miles of the discovery, the original discovery.
You can go out and tramp around land that you don't have a claim on, but you can't dig holes in it, can you?
Oh, no. No, no, no. You have to have a landholding.
Right.
You have to have a property right.
You can look at it.
Well, you can look at it, surely, unless somebody says, no trespassing on my property, and makes a point of it, you'd better not. But generally in the West, you're able to get around and see most of these places that are held by individuals, or just a lot of it is just government land or state-owned land.
But this is something you needed to know before you went in, didn't you?
Well, I think probably we took for granted pretty much that we could have access for geological study. In those days, the effort to keep people off your land was more restricted to cattle ranchers, for example, who wanted to be sure that no geologist came along and opened a wire gate and left it down so his cattle would run away. That was the principal problem. So we were good at always going through a gate and being sure that we locked it behind us so that we were not interfering with the activities of whoever was making some use of the land.
But I was just thinking when you said in the 30s you were looking at something else, but then you checked out this other.
Yes, we just we didn't have any idea of ownership. After we saw the outcrop and liked the looks of it, as I recall, Mulkey made a trip from Cananea back to Tucson and searched the records in the courthouse and found out this property actually was owned by a certain group and that we could contact them and negotiate for their property, which we did. Got an option on it.